Are you at in with the in crowd? Is this going to be a big meeting? Or?
I'm not sure. Okay. I don't think so. Yeah. I'm sorry I couldn't be more helpful.
What a guy. Going to. All right, here we go. Well, I mean, we're just going to set them and put them behind until time comes. Because it's way early, only quarter after. Testing, testing, 1, 2, testing, 1, 2. Better go. Take that on back. Check this up here.
How that work?
I just want to make sure that it's up all the way. I don't know what's going on up there. I got to ask them about those two strips of golf course. Well, I was going to take them down. There's obvious somebody put them there for reading. I know who, pretty much. Probably the dance hall crew. But James said they go, they go. Anything they stick up here, they're supposed to take now. I was going through here yesterday taking crap now. Because it was still here. From the promise, they said they're going to take it down.
Testing. 1, 2. Oh, testing. 1, 2.
Test it. That's good.
Test it. 1, 2.
Hand it to me.
Well, it didn't look like you knew if you wanted to make up your mind.
Testing. Well, I drank for it, but it wasn't there.
Didn't look like you wanted it yet.
Testing. 1, 2.
Here's on 2 batteries. Huh?
You saw one? Hello, testing. 1, 2. Hello, testing.
That's right, don't think he's well, that's just it. They're probably not that good anyway. But to burn them up would be the thing to do. James would commend you for that.
Hello, testing. 1, 2.
Thank you. Julian. Hi. Hi. Thank you. But that's what it is. Let me. Oh, wait.
Thank you.
Say something.
I was going to sit next to you in the audience.
Thank you.
I'm going to do it all that crap.
right.
Don't vomit.
We'll start in a minute.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? I haven't seen you.
I know. It's along with other stuff. So.
I hope it's not good.
It is, overall. You try to move projects down the field and survive until summer comes. Then the summer came out and my mood lifted immediately.
We started in 30 seconds and now it's in the best condition.
Yes.
I have 30 more seconds for my experience for the day. I want to start the meeting on 4:48. John, can you help us with the roll call? You guys have your seats.
Thomas Paul. Neil Barberry. Alex Chowdhury. Olivia Ford. Renee Cornell. Drew Davica. Omar Dean. John Dominguez. Osai Agrippa. Daniel Eggleston. Iris Hassan, Ellie Hernandez, Eric Harris, Anthony Rigmini, Srujan Duranti, Gabriel Kaufman, Savannah Lynn, Lee Lipschitz, Debbie Nia Carver. Here. Sarah Park. Here. Race Park. Marco Perotto Ochoa. Here. Christopher Schott. Here. Evan Shapiro. Here. Jay Wilson. Ira Valdez.
I was
Ms. Wallenbach? Ian Wallace?
Can I miss it?
Here. Thank you. Next, we'll go to the microphone, which is led by...
We'll be moving directly into the presentation from the committee, and then we will come back to the microphone.
Welcome. Can you speak to the mic itself?
Is this on? Yeah, okay. We were going to run through some of the list of our events and training schedule, but if you want to not have to go back and go through anything, you guys have specific questions on any of so we'll start with our training. So from August 10th through 12th, we're going to have a couple of back on the page. If you're for 3 days before other volunteers come, so then on August 13th through 14th, we have a rest of orientation supervisor training, and then here we have some training events to explain about. So then August 15th and 16th, our overall training begins in the 2 day class.
And then once orientation starts, it starts August 17th, and runs on the 2nd. So I usually go through some events we're planning. So August 17th, that first Friday, we have a move-in day, new student check-in. Our go-to. After that, we'll have separate version first nights and transfer first nights. All CTs on Saturday, we'll have our first orientation meeting with new students. And then throughout the day, we have simple orientations for every member of the siblings of new students. We have also San Francisco and then Salsa and Turkey event, both of which are three coach transfers. On August 19th, so that's Sunday, we'll have our second orientation meeting. During the day, we'll put on an event that we do through DHTML, for the basketball, which is kind of the service line event. While following, for the day that we just kind of get students outside and interact with different sponsors a little bit, scattered around, and then at night, we'll do Maggie Johnson, which is an event with Johnson, that will also be able to transfer. August 20th, that Monday, we'll do a welcome picnic on this AB plot. August 21st, we're going to do Identity and Belonging, which is an identity-based program for transgender students. Also, the second, so that's Wednesday, I think, which is the day of the classes. We'll have a third orientation meeting for class photo. And then finally, August 24th, so that Friday, after class starts, we're going to do a transfer week, and then cancel the class.
Sorry, just forgot to introduce ourselves. I'm Miranda. And we'll go through those. We also have some events that are still in process of being contracted and scheduled, so we have speak about it in four sessions. All students are required to attend. We have a 4-year lecture for the 10 minutes as well as and then we will be supporting Tony's partner programs for our orientation, so we won't be running the events, but they're coming.
Thank you. We do have a question from Dale. You guys all please check your laptops. Well, everything sounds great. I just want to ask, are there any problems you can see with the extended calendar, or is everything perfect?
Are there any great?
Fantastic. Please, are there any other questions? Yes.
Hi, I'm with the Veterans Representative, and I was just wondering, I heard that there's going to be a new Veterans Orientation Program, and I was wondering if you heard anything about that.
Like, for us too, as Barbara's on the first year system transfer, but like I already mentioned, is like, it was trying to help make partners about orientation. So it adds things about the mantra system, so we're moving the mantra system we meet every year. So it was 2 times for the next one to be on to the
Are there any other questions? If not, thanks so much for your time, guys. Oh, I did my chugs.
So just to be clear, you guys are in charge of like the little pamphlet book that goes to all first year students, correct? So if student organizations do want to be included in that, what is the process they should go about to reach out if they want to just add it to that booklet sometime in the future?
So you can reach out to our advisors, Peggy or Katie, but it's mostly restricted to new student programming so that clubs and organizations will have another chance.
Or now to showcase
different organizations that you can join. So we can ask our advisor for more information.
Olivia?
So I don't know if I just listed, but like, I was curious, given these instances that sort of happened in the past year that I've had racial undertones, are you guys doing anything to help promote and increase diversity in conversation and specific groups for
Yeah, so like I mentioned for transfers, we're doing a bang and long, which is what we've done last year as well. For new students, the administration mandated that we're doing intergroup dialogue discussions with new students in small groups. So that's like based off the like, class. I think it's offered in, I don't know what's it's offered in, but like it's class. So like, it's similar idea based off that, it's maybe like 3 hours per meeting for like small groups and new students that might end up being there for long groups as well.
Debbie?
I have a follow-up question. So is this like IEP style orientation you require for first year students? And if so, what would the topic of conversation would impact on that?
It's
any last questions? Not thanks for the background. Is the convocation committee here? All right, would you guys have to?
So my name is Lindsay Gorman. I'm the class of 2018 First, I'd like to thank my community members who are now for this for their hard work and dedication to the process. It's been long, we've had some tough conversations, but we've come to a great result. The communication mission statement is to provide a speaker who shall instill a sense of unity and shall be selective to appeal to the diverse nature of class. As a successful centennial graduating class, the convocation committee sought to move our graduation speaker down to central areas in the body of the previous year's speakers and the body of the panel's allowed and other speakers. We wanted a speaker who challenges the status quo, who lives their truth, who is snap-worthy. And of course, we wanted a speaker who has excelled and continues to excel in their professional and non-profit sectors. Our committee engaged in nearly a year-long research and evaluation process to find a candidate for success and commitment to quality will inspire our graduating class for years to come. With the core values of diversity, equity, excellence, and career on the hooks of our mind, we chose a speaker who has embodied all of these. For these reasons, I am very excited to announce that Ava DuVernay is here 2018.
Thank you so much. Thank you for that. We'll go back into the microphone.
If any members of the community would like to speak at this time, the mic is yours. Feel free to come up, take a seat, stand, just use the microphone. All right, with that, we'll be closing up the microphone.
And next, we'll be going into approval of the minutes. Can every representative take 1 minute to approve the approval 13 and then 19 minutes?
Hey, question.
Yes.
Is anything from the election?
You read that?
Is there a minute from the meeting that we're going to that other room?
We're also the April 13th minutes are behind that meeting, and then the April 19th minutes are behind that.
Are there any dissent? If not, we'll do it by unanimous consent. So I know the set, and by unanimous consent, the approved minutes have been approved. We go straight to announcements and reports. First, the VP conference.
Hi, everyone. So I just wanted to report on the special projects request that the appropriations committee has fulfilled since the CU tonight issue. So essentially, we have funded LAL at $1,250. This wasn't a CU tonight applicant. We funded Cornell Welcome Refugees at $1,000, and we funded the Delta Ball at $1,499. So I'm required to report that in standing rules, so I'm doing that right now. Let me know if you have any questions.
All right, no questions, then we'll go to Mario.
So the Financial Review Committee's Summer Experience Grant received 280 bonus applications this year. They're very excited. The committee has approved $45,000 to go to these grants. There's a first-generation student graduation happening on May 5th. And if you are a first-generation student yourself and are graduating or an undergrad or a grad student, please reach out to me. We are trying to go to the graduate, so hit me up if you're
interested. Okay, this is Jaylon.
How many students were accepted for the summer school?
We don't know yet. The committees are still in the process of reviewing. I can tell you that the max award is $3,000, and on average, people who do receive the grant get about $1,500. Last year, we received 272 applications, and we were able to award about 10% of applicants.
John?
My announcement is more pertaining to the new members. So just a reminder that this Saturday we are going to have the first round of our internal elections, that's liaisons and community members. Your presence is required, so if you can't make it to Wellington Rockefeller at 11 a.m., then you need to let me know or by email.
This is for the new members. Then Osai, your presentation.
Hi,
during this presentation, if any community members wish to speak, just raise your hand and I'll protect you. Whenever you're ready, Justin.
All right, thanks. All right, so my name is Osar. I'm the freshman rep and the junior rep. And the Academic Cost Committee, which I'm part of, basically conducted this entire survey devoted to student centered in Greenville. And I'm happy to discuss some of these highlights that are not on the results. So, most, you know, first, why did we switch to this?
So, was it, can you adjust the projector, please?
Oh, yes. So, basically, what we wanted to do was to initiate attitudes for students that are in the community because we felt that they could be changed, but we didn't even know where to start from. So, we wanted to reach out to the community, see what some of the abilities that they were hearing about the entire process. So that is like a major reason why we wanted to do that and why we wanted to do it in the first place. So if you move on to demographics, about 1,000 people fill out the survey, which is really high, and I'm really proud of the people who fill out the survey because we'll give away 25 starting gift cards for completing the survey. So 40% of the people completed the survey were freshmen, 27% were sophomores, 17% were new years, and 60% were seniors. So that's just some demographic information for you guys. So in terms of colleagues, they have a mixed distribution. Arts and sciences and engineering are the top two. Cal is 40%. And the least amount of spots that we have is a 12 students to our survey. So here are some highlights. These slides are just going to be a guide of the highlights that we gather from this entire survey. So the majority of students, myself included, 50%, prepare more than a week in advance for Greenville in terms of trying to get into the specific process that we need to graduate or that we want to take as that we want to take for fun. And the top few resources that students use for Greenville are the course scheduler tool, the scheduling tool on the website where you can drag and drop your classes and see where they conflict and see where they kind of like spot. So that's one of the people reach out, a lot of students reach out to other students to see their experiences in the course and make their decision from there. And so advisor is good that you know what you're getting into before you actually decide to enroll in class. So the second part is, besides reading grades and student evaluations, which comprise the majority of the responses, students suggested the following to improve the scope of the framework. So one would be past professor evaluations. I know we have a lot of external websites like greatmindprofessor.com, but those things are really artificial and formal. So a lot of students suggested that we have an official system to basically come about a particular course or a particular class prior to the professor.
Secondly, it is estimated enrollment based on previous semesters. So what this is, what this would do is, hey, we look at last semester, and then also consider what the course scheduling of the next year would be, it would tell you how many people are expected to enroll. So I know from personal experience, a lot of CS classes are overfilled, and I can get into 3110 because the need to be able to take it. And that is, in fact, because a lot of people want to take CS classes, but people in the major can't get in. So that's an issue regarding like who gets into this class, who doesn't get into the class. So they have to prioritize it that way. Third is to combine course scheduler and course scheduler student center. And a lot of people found it arbitrary that you can create a schedule on course scheduler, but you have to create an actual enrollment in student center, which our students found confusing and like somewhat difficult and somewhat difficult to navigate because you have to class of discussion section, you have to enter, you have to write down the class code for each discussion section for each lecture, and then you can input sort of the class of student center and enroll at a particular time. Next thing is kind of ties into the first thing, student comments about the course. I know we have course forms, but they're not necessarily made public. And I know we have a lot of unofficial tools that are available to students to evaluate so that they can have a voice and evaluate the courses that they took the semester before. A lot of students would want to see an official option. The last one is the amount of time spent per week just like doing homework, going to lecture, pre-loads, etc. And lastly, we're just student center because I think it just crashes on time. So moving into some more raw data, currently 35% of students could not get into courses required by their college during the pre-roll. Another 30% could get into courses required by their major, and some of these popular courses that that people can get during pre-roll were Bio 1350, Chem 2080, CS 2800 in that class, which kind of sucks. Hotel class and discussion section for various courses. It's like last semester, I tried to get into my online math by 2020 discussions, and like the very moment that I checked it, it was just full. There was only one discussion section at that particular time. So I ended up having to do like a little discussion, which was not less than desirable. A lot of people end up in undesirable time spots because of the massive rush that they were able to get the next one anymore to open up the laptop. And, you know, that's quite interesting. So, moving on. So this is one of the interesting things that I thought was funny. 40% of students have cases where student center would track both these are beautiful. And in fact, like one of the suggestions that was made to improve pre-roll was to develop an anti-crash program because a lot of the time, I thought it was funny because like I'm a CS major myself, and we don't develop programs so to stop other programs from crashing. Rather, we fix the actual program so it doesn't crash in the first place. So that was one thing that I found very interesting. That was another thing. So notice the highlights. A lot of students from the West Coast during the summer, a lot of freshman students during the summer from the West Coast suggested a change in pre-roll time because 7 a.m. Eastern time is literally four, it's like 4 a.m. Pacific time. And a lot of schools from the West Coast have to get up at 4 in the morning to commit home, which is very undesirable. And like if you wake up at 7 a.m. on the West Coast, by the time it's like 7 a.m. on the West Coast, it's already 10 p.m. on the East Coast. A lot of East Coast students are free already, and you're not going to get into a class anymore because of time zones. And another thing is that the priority of students is that the preamble times should stay where they are. Another fact that the committee found interesting was like 22% of students wanted preamble in the evening, which we actually discussed in the committee, but we came to the conclusion that it would be best if the time was now, because a lot of people have classes at like 7 or 8 p.m. and that's a disadvantage to those people who have classes during those times. So we came to that conclusion. So these are the last highlights. 60% of students wanted to continue to have people during the summer and during the freshman year, while 40% of students wanted to have pre-enroll during orientation, and we also discussed the need to have pre-enroll during orientation because that way you're settling into the next phase of life, and you know, you want to pre-enroll them in now. But we also said that people would rather be enjoying all the orientation activities and partying and hanging out with their friends or like new friends that they've made rather than just sit there and pre-enroll and try to keep the rush and get into the classes that they need. And 177 students or 27% of students wish to be contacted by the committee. So I think that's an interesting thing to share. So like some possible next steps that we can take is that I think we need more people on our committee to get more perspective on the student center and on the pre-enroll, because I think it's something that we need to investigate further, and it hasn't really changed much. So I think we need more perspective before we can start really investigating and really start to hammer out some of the issues that occur with the process. We can start to work on resolutions regarding it, and lastly, we can reach out to administration regarding changing some of the policies that we found to be arbitrary. So, thank you very much.
Great job on this. I'm actually very surprised. I'm very impressed at how depth the studies and how well your presentation was. And the committee has also, I think, so first, great job. First one speaker is this too.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the same thing. Really good job. I think it's really important. Thanks for the positive background.
Are you on the EBC or have you sat in the chair?
Yes,
I'm back in Boston. Next is Olivia.
Yes, so one of the things that I wanted to say is that I'm actually a really big supporter of the idea of having a parent or of having a parent or a freshman, because one of the things that you mentioned is people on the West Coast. Don't feel very little time, but at the same time, I consider that there are a bunch of international students who have to be more of a and don't have the time, they'll be at work. So, it's, for example, for the women in California, I could be doing this completely wrong. I think it's 7 p.m. in China. It's a little different, like some people will be in school, well, some people can be exposed, some people can be at work, some people will do other things, so I think that would sort of equal the process if we did it.
When it comes to working on stopping student centers from crashing, and really touch the science, like what is in the realm of possibility? Yeah, what is in the realm of possibility? Like, have you reached out to the CIP that could help? We haven't, because there's kind of a starting point to prevent, to like gauge the student opinion, gauge the student credit before we go on and investigate things that are possibly, that could possibly be adverse to students.
Next is Ruben.
Yeah, so I think Olivia and I agree on this in terms of the pre-cross situation. I was surprised that there were 60% of students that said they would not be concerned this summer for pre-call. That's just like unfortunately, it would be ridiculous if you would go over the actual analysis of it. The other thing that's important to do is recognize that individuals have access to academic advisors for these situations. And then on top of that, did you say that the APC sort of concluded that while the 7 a.m. time slot was pretty crappy, that was the best time slot?
We were discussing it in one of our meetings. I personally argue for like a midnight time, because a lot of students a lot of students feel that 7 a.m. is way too early for people to get up and be overslept or pre-call like I did.
I get screwed.
I mean, luckily I did not get screwed, but I know a lot of people did because they overslept until like 7 in the morning, and that's pretty. And I think it's pretty arbitrary and ridiculous for people to be waking up at 7 a.m., especially if they have classes of like 10, like, don't have classes of like 10 a.m.
So, do you think it wouldn't make sense to make it like during the day or during the evening or during the day, just because everyone has classes? On top of that, if you can do like a later evening, a lot of clubs and organizations can do during those times, as well as group projects, often go later in the night. And I personally like the APC agree that 7 a.m. is a pretty good crappy time slot, but when you have like bad time slots as a whole, like another time slot is a bad time slot, you're that's the worst. And in that case, I think like 7 a.m. is the best for you, just because like you couldn't really increase it to 8 or anything, because once you hit 8, you need that 30-minute time period to like first off get the class, but also like to accommodate for the fact that student centers crashing so frequently. Like it literally takes like 40 minutes to even if it is that kind of 7 a.m.
So that is something that is, you know, it's a necessary evil. The 7 a.m. time slot, like, I agree with you that the 7 a.m. time slot is a necessary evil, because I don't want to put like 7 a.m. vehicle, but like at the same time, you can move it to like any other time. No, I'm like, you're putting at least some group at a disadvantage. So that's what we concluded as a group.
And when it came to determining how to avoid the crashing of the website, and this was existing at all, is that sort of in the steps?
Like I said to Shabuda, like we wanted to gauge the opinion before we reached out to any of these groups, because like once again, we could be like, if we reached out to the CIT before we engaged the student opinion, we could be possibly doing something that is adverse to the student.
Zach?
How's it going? This is really great. So like, two brief comments. So in terms of like the morning time slot moving to the evening, I mean, the internet traffic is in the evening. I don't know if that was always said. And then, that's looking at the analytics. But anyways, in terms of the second comment, regarding on the pre-call problem and the getting locked out of class. I mean, a lot of that has to do with like the seniority of where freshmen get last and sophomore second to last. And I mean, I've noticed a problem like as someone who's been teaching a system where courses discussion on having class size be more flexible. For instance, I, as a senior, was taking elective where in the beginning of the elective, like people who had that major were not allowed to take that class. Like sophomores and freshmen were pushed out because so many juniors and seniors took it. So, creating more flexible class sizing, talking to proper schools about distributing overseas, I think those are things that would like protect like people who have that major or like enrolled in a certain minor and need to get these classes done. So things like that could also kind of mitigate the student center issues.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think the issue with class size is that most colleges are set based on how big the room is. So if they can't get a bigger room or they're assigned a smaller room, the class size will be set to figure out what's possible. So, how do you do that?
Yeah. Next is Luke.
Hello. Are there any questions on the survey about students receiving advice from their parents about enrolling classes?
From where?
From their parents?
Yes.
Do you know that number?
I believe it was 8%.
Okay, thank you.
Chris?
Yeah, two things. I think it's great that it's great survey, it's great that you got people to reach out to respond. It's very important to look quickly at the verification of our recommendations, particularly when we're talking about putting up community grids and the coastal views. Like, we definitely have to talk to faculty about that, like, faculty center. About how that's going to be implemented. I think this is a lot of pushback. And also, for the, it sounds like a really good idea to have all the students sign up for the application and accept all the summit, but that might create some logistical rules. Gives the administration less time, all involved, others less time to accommodate for the
Can I just that for 1 second? Like, to all of you who are saying, oh, you have to reach out to this, oh, you have to reach out to this.
I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah, but like, so, like, for those of you like who say that, oh, we have reached out to this, oh, we have reached out to that, we have reached out to this, this is just the beginning, this is just a preliminary thing. And to have criticism of, like, we have reached out to this, or have reached out to set groups, like, so early in the process is somewhat interesting.
And so, the record that was not a criticism, that was like an encouragement to say, like, this is great.
Okay.
Like, if you want to move forward to this, to like actual like implementation, you have to talk to faculty. Like, this is not a criticism whatsoever.
Next is Grace.
So, I was wondering for the times of pre-referral, does weekend one of the options?
Yes. So we actually discussed as a committee on
weekends.
So we actually discussed on committee weekend pre-roll times. But the conclusion that issue of that was that a lot of people are away. People who are from the city or from like Texas and Mexico are away from previous times. So once again, somebody with the track small at that particular day, depending on the class, especially because the people for the medium that is making the structure of the
study. Was that the reason provided by the survey, or was it just decided that people are just there?
It was something we discussed.
And that's Ms. Natalia.
Do you hear the question by chance whether or not we use the on-campus Wi-Fi or the on-campus Wi-Fi or the general like the
campus
Wi-Fi?
No.
Okay, but I know that that's something that people have wasted, but when they use, like, I think the person thinks like having a problem that every single people would have a problem because they don't use Cornell Wi-Fi right here. Because I don't think it's a system problem. I genuinely think there's too many people on the Wi-Fi at the same time. So I don't know if that's something that you
guys
would like to add.
So that's something we can talk to Stephanie about like in the coming weeks and the notes and so about like increasing the server capacity for student center because it is my understanding that students are now contracts Oracle to handle student center for them
which is Tangle, which is the same platform that many other universities use. So it is going to be difficult to get, you know, safety to increase server capacity, especially when someone else is managing the actual system.
I think you'll set it up. Next, they also give a quick presentation on the code elements. And while he's setting up, John, can you actually call a roll call for attendance for the new lesson?
Greg, how's the mom? I go over to Ryan Gold. Nick McCulloch. Patty Kevin. Ryan Whitechop.
I said, no response to that.
Who's the show there? I'm Sean John. Abigail Heather. Do you know one another?
Oh, she's a new one. Is that it? Oh.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so.
I just want to quickly give an update of work that's being done in the university, something that you should all be aware about. For those of you who don't know the document that governs our internal campus assistant is known as the campus for conduct, if you get a JA, it says, well, Matt's here. He's going to take over from me. But the judicial administrator oversees the campus for conduct. Any amendments made to the conduct, the university assembly's code judicial committee, Chairman Roger Tagliere. And I have a few code amendments. If you want me to go through them, these amendments have been proposed by the code judicial committee, and they're going to go to the university assembly for approval. If you have concerns about these languages, if you think that they're not appropriate for students, you should go to the UA meetings next week and the week after and explain why they aren't going to be good, or if you're truly in favor of them, go to the UA after, because then that might be completely more good.
Absolutely, thank you. This is my time
to also, very cheap, very concerns with the MSA. You can call
it and that's important for the UA to do your floor.
Very briefly, so it's kind of like, the first one is regarding discussion in terms of sanctioning organizations as well as how we do address sanctioning organizations federally. Right now, the code means that for organizations, a black health group or a club, they only suspend it for 1 year.
Sure.
Or they have to be suspended. And the JA committee feel that by allowing that timeline of up to 5 years, we'll have more discussion between us as keeping an organization permanently off campus and only being able to convert those slap on the wrist. So this first provision makes it so that the maximum suspension money for organizations is increased from 1 to 5 years, and further that the statute of limitations for other organizations is increased from 1 to 2 years, with the rationale for that long-term instances or issues such as engagement, et cetera, need to extend the longer period to allow information to talk together. The system would intuitively wait things to happen for the back at a different level because it's one of the information, which is allowed to be brought in to provide a continuous instantiation or other long term to this conduct.
Okay, I've got a
participant for every question.
Sure. So this says this, so the things on the right are essentially what would happen if the violation occurs? So the thing on the right are essentially the repercussions for a violation?
Yes. So
what is the violation for Title III, Article 4, section?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It is essentially to clarify, the fullest of sanctions can go from simple down to fines, probation, all the way up to expulsion. I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but devices. Also doing is increasing the period for suspension for students and relations of 1 year. This is increasing the quarter of the year significantly to 5 years. Yes, the second one is regarding suspension and business of non-compliance. And what that is in essence, if you don't, if your sanction is to complete a paper, you don't complete the paper with time frame right now, you want to have suspended, no discretion whatsoever. This version will allow the JA to, in essence, instead of suspending you to either pension or boosting analysis, that would be able to suspend you without full discretion. Then there's also the how business called non-attributed minors interact with code. In essence, you've probably seen URL runs, summer camps, and stuff for children, top camps, students who are not students in Cornell or on campus. As a background, they're under the text code conduct. This language removes them out of the text code conduct so long as they're subject to other written interpretations. In essence, they get that if they're in a top camp or a Cornell summer program, as long as they have other rules in this model. The next one is regarding the rule of indefinite suspensions. The code currently allows for SSD to suspend indefinitely. And you can serve that or have that achievement result. You can come back in 2 years, you can come back in 10 years, you can come back in that. And often there's a list where he's already said that he will not seek that sanction at all. And this is you're actually removing that stuff from the code. SSD, after you can serve that indefinite suspension, you can remain in that suspension. Other than that, the next section is regarding one of the staff members who appear in your keyboards. For context, you know that this is your people's vision. And we're making it so that, in essence, it's vacancy that are filled within 1 year for the balance of term, and that students who enter the final year are doing more entry than the year. And this is a lot of the great elements, so if you put it down, how to do it. Then we're also adding expressions from internal contact directives. I'm very short, we go to the JA and say, oh, John Doe beat me up. The JA has imported his internal contact record. Make it some hard terrain order without talking to the party. The cash of these issues was then going on the temporary interest run for 6 to 9 months, whether it's been inserted that they have been misused. It clarifies that parties are used, it clarifies that 21 day duration is going to be removed. And it also says that to break it, you're not allowed to be suspended if the JA has imported that out of the point as well. We are also increasing the size of the area of the boards, the chairs and road boards to solicit the members, are increasing 5 to 75 members, the initial 10 students and 5 faculty and 5 staff. Additionally, it also clarifies how the university assembly and GDC will interact with the office of assembly process. The current code language is not necessarily reflect how we operate, and therefore it's going to add clarity. We're also clarifying how the members can remove the hearing boards. That's if you had members not in this conduct, but since they never show up, they will be trained and respond to emails, and then this is taken on the new for receipts. So we're clarifying how they're removed. We're also changing how we oversee hearing boards procedures. For those of you who may have known, last year was a public hearing that was set in 100 years, and the hearing boards contain an internal set of procedures for how they run hearings. Those are not right now currently managed by the assembly, so it's done by the board internally. Well, the hearing board chairs are set, they're not changing the name tweet. So our goal is to access the hearing so that the UA is extended all of a sudden, and the UA is extended. And finally, we have a group that might be addressing public hearings itself. Right now, you can request a public hearing up to 2 days before your hearing, and that is just a reminder of the main process. So we're tweaking it so that instead of 2 days to complete the hearing, it's now 8 days after the hearing date. A lot of time using the design and also to ensure that you are able to do it. We're very prepared for that. We're also looking at changes to the data recovery process, that is still being discussed. After 3 days, myself, we're in the process, we're also sure the UA about those.
and we also have the Women's Engagement Master Plan before this Friday, and then especially planning to better that those are what we are as police. So I know it's a lot of talking. I thought that a lot of product would help, but I'm happy to answer your questions.
So,
the Kinescope product, I guess, was the link, and the Kinescope product is in fact holding up.
So I'm talking about their safety policies, but for messages that people want.
So yes, code applies to all members of the federal community involved in this group. If you are just a visitor, you are still expected to abide by it, however there are also. So here you the word is a safety risk factor. To tell you that many times, I'm not doing that. This is the legal use because code is also very legal. Even if there's some of the gas calls that are out there, it's not just good.
Travis. Chris.
I had one question regarding the indefinite suspension because it says here, I guess it's clarifying. So students can now only be suspended for up to 5 years, no longer. Is that correct?
It is perfect. Yes, 5 years
is the
next one. Yes, it's 5 years, 5 years. Because in that case, it's more than 5 years.
And just to be just individuals, not organizations.
That's correct.
Thank you.
So we actually don't have any other questions. Thanks so much for coming back. Appreciate it. And we'll go into business of the day. Business 45 and sponsor for the report.
Hey guys, okay, so I don't know how much we discussed this resolution last week because I was in the video because I was in the demo video since I appreciate it. Basically, this resolution was passed from PSA, and what it calls for is to enable international students to act as RAs, kind of like graduate student RAs in off campus housing. The reason this resolution is necessary is because Cornell is pursuing a new model. Off-campus housing units, it's kind of like, but also not, because basically Cornell owns the real estate, which really stands, the building itself is completely operated by a private entity. What that means is that you can ask to students, since you can ask to students in general, you cannot be able to have a special building. So on the university campus, you can ask students to work out how to do what that means, what that means, and how to apply for jobs for those vendors. So, Cornell recently entered into this new private, it's called P3, public private partnership, in Maplewood, division of off campus. And so, international students can no longer act as graduate partners. The reason that's such a big problem is because the 70% of faculty students living in Maplewood are actually international students and they no longer live on campus. And oftentimes, international students, international graduate students, are really motivated to international undergraduate students because they have to save public support networks, save public bombing events, they have various departments, they have not had anyone else in the company to track them, and we might have never had an instruction to use the network of regulations to the industry, rather than having used to drive them in the American cultural environment, and so international undergraduates are really helpful. So that's the one aspect. The other guy is also the prize of these institutions. Employment opportunities and education opportunities that they might want to take for a couple of years and then have to have a chance to grad students. So I think it would be great if the SA passes this in support of international grad students because we can provide about half of all graduate students that are studying really put an emphasis on that, like, to do that, really how to provide content.
Yeah. So we do have, we have two people to speak to this. I'm going to suggest you. Okay, this is the set, right? This is the set. Because they have questions, there's only two people on the call to speak to this.
I believe that the person who is motioning to vote has concerns against this resolution passed before the Senate, and I would like to ask the speaker specifically about that. You said he is going to leave, all the other reasons that we should go vote.
All right. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so I just want to quickly ask that there were concerns presented by certain student assembly members last week that there's a need to start government sometimes when actions get support from all the other assemblies without the necessity of it. I was hoping we could touch on how this resolution and the impact of it could have an impact on undergraduate students
specifically. So the reason this is relevant for undergraduates is that there's currently, there's a huge expansion of more campus housing, and it's like a community partnership where basically Cornell owns the land, and it's operated by a private organization. This is very popular because it's seen as a more safe cost estimate. And so it's definitely imaginable that some of the housing solutions that the campus might follow this PP model, and that international students could act as a raise and lower student. And so having this as like a pre-edit to that, and to force them be able to employ international armies in those North campus housing to years to come, I think it would be great. And I guess I could, I don't know if we could add more to that, because I'm not going to be like tangible, like what I'm supposed to do with North campus housing. Following that model, it's 100% of this is expected to be something probably already on the chart. Does that make sense?
Yeah. One of us, Zach is the last speaker. Zach.
So, that's just a quick point. As someone who works at the P3s, I'm going to find the result clause. So, the P3s is why international students are served, like, not allowed to serve as a fail, like, not can't serve as a leader. That's a failure in the recruitment process. So, I mean, going forward, if the university does a P3, like, when they put out a request for proposal, they should say to the people getting it, have to allow anyone, any student, international or domestic, to be allowed to be hired as a leader. And then secondly, for this existing group, you could add a clause. So there's something called the change order, where the owning party can tell the people, like, essentially filing a change order, either party can do it to change the terms of the contract. So if you are allowed to alter the terms of the people in the negotiation stuff, that could potentially be done.
Yeah, that's great. I recommend you to talk to Manisha or Nina about that since we're going to get the details. My answer.
So, Nate, would you like to?
Hi, my name is Nate. I just wanted to take response to the resolution. I think I understand where we're going, but I think that potentially is incorrect. This isn't the problem with the P3 international student employment bit. It's not something that's contractual, it's a federal immigration thing, and so we have to change our visa requirements. So it's not something EDR developed with it, it's something Cornell did. It's the fact that on the type of visa international students are on, they can have employment with the university, but not with private entity, which is stable. So,
well, thank you for that. If you have a motion to vote. All right, all those in favor? All those against? Attention, 21-01 passes. And we're going to new business, resolution 29, approving the
everyone good? Good, great. So the Appropriations Committee met on Monday and has proposed amendments to Appendix C. This is a biannual review that happens regularly after the bi-annual funding cycle. We spent 5 hours in the committee discussing this, and all of the discussions were based on the reports that we had approved in the fall. So I guess first of all, I'm going to do is thank the members of the Appropriations Committee for just bearing with us while we do this. This is not easy. We spent like a lot of hours on this committee on the room and stuff. So thank you to the people who did it, and thank you to the people at the Student Assembly for your attention. This is kind of important. We're going to like try to fix the problems that we encountered in the fall right now. Also, Dale wanted to really remind you guys that he sent out a PDF version that might be a little more legible. So, yeah. So, just I'm gonna walk through everything, and then if you want something you can want to share up. So I know that you all spent like a lot of time reading this stuff. I had asked you multiple times, which in case you didn't, I'm going to go through it. So the first change is the first change in Appendix B, and just so everyone's clear, these are the guidelines for bonding organizations. The first change is changing the word investigation to investigating. That's not controversial.
Can you focus on the big changes?
Yeah, I'm going to focus on the big changes. Yeah, that was not. Yeah. So the first thing that kind of pops up is SA access. One of the problems that we had encountered was sometimes we would request information from organizations, and they wouldn't furnish it for whatever reason. This happened with the cinema, for example, and is actually that this was something that actually caused a lot of issues later on in the semester, as you might have witnessed. So SA access is something that we added. It looks like a pretty interesting funding guideline. Lo and behold, I actually didn't, this is not my idea, this is Omar's idea. So if you're looking for some link to that, blame him. The next thing that we looked at is public promotion engagement. And Dale, you can step in here if I'm missing something. Essentially, what we did is it used to be the case that anything that is funded by the Student Assembly had to say funded in part by the Student Assembly as a recognition that like the Student Assembly ultimately allocates and sets the student activity fee. 2 years ago, Matt's kind of proposed taking that out. I think I thought that was a mistake at the time. I opposed it at the time. This year, the Appropriations Committee came back to its senses and made the right decision. So we're putting it back in Appendix B so that people understand that the Student Assembly is important, and that we stop getting, like people stop reaching out to me and they're like, are you on SAFC? Because I'm not. So next is funds partitioning and prohibition of compensation. So this is really important, and I highly recommend that you focus on it. So essentially, as it stands right now, all bilingual funded organizations are required to have a single university operating account. And in that account, that is where the SAF disbursement kind of, that's where the SAF disbursement is distributed each year. So essentially what we're proposing changing is each organization will either have to have the SAF account, or it will also have to have the SAF earned income. So if you're an organization that charges, that uses student pretty free money to subsidize an event that you then charge money for, you have to then take that money and either put it into the SAF account or the SAF earned income. It can be either one. So either one would work. And then what we do is we put a prohibition on that account, which is you cannot compensate people out of either of those accounts. So essentially what this does is this prevents the problem that we had with the cinema, which was where we would fund their operations, and then what they would do is they would spend money on the operations, and then they would charge students to use the operations that we already funded and collect the money and use it to pay staff. So we like one guidelines, that would be an appendix B violation, and we wouldn't have to do this over a violation.
We don't foresee any organization being funded in the next 2 years in a violation of this provision. This is really more of a benefit. So we don't look back in 20 or 30 years, that organization acquisition using all the student activity money to fund employee salaries, and they're incentivized to have higher student activity money to increase salaries.
So that's what that is. To make it pretty abundantly clear that the student activity fee is not supposed to be used to pay staff under any circumstances at all. So we're making that abundantly clear now so that we don't have these issues in 20 or 30 years from now. Okay, next page. So this was something we had a discussion about a couple months ago. We wanted to, the committee approved including political affiliation as an item that we would part of it. We cannot discriminate against people based on political affiliation. So that's in there. Do with that as you will. We'll move on. So the next thing we did is under Alana, we took out the provision that said McFab had to only do musical events. These are the organization-specific guidelines now, so each one of these only applies to the organization under which it's headed. So we took out that along with McFab only doing musical events, because they haven't been doing musical events, so why would we regulate that? And then we also took a couple of the nays and the shalls, just because we realized that that's important. For alternative rigs, we want them to reduce their transportation costs, so we told them that they should reduce their transportation costs. Regarding athletics and physical education, as you might remember, kind of the big problem that we had is that we felt that they weren't marketing women's sports enough. So essentially what we've done is we have essentially said that you have to increase funding towards marketing women's sports, and you have to report to the student assembly on how you have done that in the future. So we think that that's important, and we incentivize them to prioritize funding women's sports and getting people to expect. The collegiate leadership program, that's just internal stuff. That actually doesn't change anything except that updates the rules a little bit. It's nothing that's up here. So then the next thing is convocation committee. We changed the passive voice to the active voice there. We included directly elected graduate members of the UA because in the past they had been not included. And then we also will make the SA vice president of finance and ex officio member of the committee just because they handle so much money, and it's like we had a problem with them where they actually the advisor pretty much raided another organization. Yeah, last year the advisor actually raided another organization. Maybe it was the administration. They raided another organization account, and they took $30,000 from senior days. So that can't happen. That's really bad. And now my class is going to have more expensive senior days because convocation committee last year broke the bank. So that shouldn't happen. So then we removed everything regarding the Cornell Cinema, and we, under Cornell Concert Commission, we didn't change anything, except we took out a requirement that said that they would have to do at least one event in Bearsden every year, otherwise everything's exactly the same there. Regarding CUEMS, the only thing we added is that they will have to record the number of undergraduates, or at least try to record the number of undergraduates who use their services. And then I actually was contacted by them already. So instead of doing $12,500 per year, they would like to see that increase to $15,000 per year so that they can afford, so that instead of saving $50,000, they can save $60,000 on a 4-year basis for their cars. Pretty procedural. I think they feel they need it. I trust them. So I think we'll amend that next week or the next one. So then regarding CU tonight, and this is kind of the beginning of a longer conversation we're going to have about CU tonight. The committee basically approved increasing oversight over their hearings process. So you're requiring that they let organization appeal decisions to the appropriations committee. And then we're also requiring that they adhere to the rubric and that they're going to have to get it approved by the appropriations committee because we were pretty disappointed with the rubric that they presented in the fall and then they didn't even use it this spring. So we're going to want them to develop that and then use it. And to prove that they used it, they're going to have to send the results to the vice president and the funders after each funding cycle. So they've got to develop a rubric, use the rubric, and then prove they use the rubric. It's like pretty reasonable. This is not that bad. So yeah, okay. We'll move on to the Orientation Steering Committee. We actually debated about this before. Some people wanted to change that number of $1.12 to a higher number so that more funding would go towards education regarding consent and sexual assault. But we ultimately decided that it just makes sense to like let them decide and just say that they should be more than whatever's currently there. So we didn't set an actual number, we just said more than what's there. And then just reduce the cost of apparel and tell us how the feedback surveys go. Regarding Outdoor Odyssey, essentially the main recommendation that we had for Outdoor Odyssey is when we gave Outdoor Odyssey money, the point and the original intent of us giving them the money was to subsidize costs for low-income individuals who need the financial aid. So we want to make sure that they have allocated an amount like at least $20,000 per year to go towards that. So that because we're giving them like $25,000 a year, so we want at least $20,000 of the amount that we give them to go towards helping low SES students. And then we really want them to figure out how they can make their trips accessible to the differently abled. So we require that they investigate that and report that to the student assembly. I think, yeah, in the fall or fall. So, yeah.
Quick question. For orientation security?
Yes.
Part 6, is it OSS shall be more than $1.20 or?
$1.12.
Okay, you deleted it by one.
Yeah, the number didn't. We changed the number and we changed it back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's $1.12. Sorry, if I didn't. Yeah, so, okay, back down to our Odyssey. She'll report their findings and stuff. Okay, so then regarding senior days, we just want senior days to report the for each event, just how the attendance was, how many people showed up. Because not this past report actually did a really good job, but I think that there were some issues in the past from what I talked with Diana about. Like sometimes the oversight isn't as good, so we think that this would be really important. So that the new senior class can know what events cost what money. Okay, regardless of the programming board, the only thing we're adding here is actually a requirement on non-activity fee paying individuals and we actually need to draw some numbers on the board when we did this. But basically, the amount that we will be paying next year in funding for SOPE is equal to $19 per undergraduate student. Whereas the amount that they currently charge for grad students is only $20 per student. But not every undergraduate goes to SOPE. And so the way you should calculate like what a fair price to charge people who don't pay the activity fee would be to take the total subsidy that we give to SLOPE and divide that by the expected or projected undergraduate attendees to account for the fact that not all undergraduates, although most undergraduates, go to SLOPE. So that number will be a number that's higher than 20. So the price will go up for them, and SLOPE's revenues should go up if they do this. Slope Media Group, this was a fun one. So they had a problem, they were giving away shop classes. They can't do that. So we are basically saying that we can't do giveaways unless we approve of the giveaway. We'll obviously approve of like the magazine. But like they did shop classes like in 2015, and we said like please stop, and then they like changed the budget item to like glassware, and yeah, it's the same thing. So appendix B. Okay, so for SAFC, I've actually been in contact with Yashvi and Uchi about this. We're basically going to, that requirement number three, we're actually going to strike that. And then we are going to amend the language in four just a little bit so that it basically is very clear. So that it's very clear that SAP is not meet a 3% per year growth, but it's okay if they do more, but that they're expected to try to project 3% growth based on their team. So they've currently grown at 4.5% to 5% per year, and that's like pretty unsustainable. That's like 10% over a 2 year timeline cycle, so that's not okay. So we're just saying like it's okay if they don't get the 3%, we really like to see them try, and we would like to see that considered, and we agree that that'll be amended. No. I say. No, it doesn't. Okay, so they are wanting to bring up the students then. So we were going to propose putting an appendix B guideline for the student assembly, but the reason we can't do that is because we would basically be fining ourselves, and then whatever money we would be taking it and putting it into the special projects fund. So that would just give us the ability to just altering our budget. The logical equivalent of that would just be altering the budget. There's no reason for that. If you want to appendix B yourself, just do it.
So we want for next year, as discussed in the last semester, we want 100% of the students on the application to go forward to the financial aid review committee. We appendix B that. The only thing that can possibly do would be definitely go to the financial aid review committee, because finding the SAA violation of appendix B would take the entirety of the student assembly's budget and put it into the special projects line item, and it would be an end of the circle. So for next year, I will be allocating 100% of the student's allocation into the summer experience grant, and we will work with the budget after the
what was that? Okay, I'll just continue. So for welcome weekend, one of the problems that the committee had in the fall was that welcome weekend was offering free meals to grad students for the midnight breakfast, and we don't want them to do that because the money that they get is exclusively from undergraduates. And then we just want them to seek out co-sponsorships. The Willow State Hall Student Union Board. This was an organization that we initially thought would not do so great a job last semester, but actually impressed us. But we want to make sure that they're on the right track, because they submitted essentially the same byline packet two cycles in a row, and that's not possible. So we're basically going to make sure that they just adhere to a yearly budget, especially because they're going to be living off of a large surplus that they had forgotten to report. So we just want to keep a tab on that. And then so we get to the Women's Resource Center, and this was actually for this one we actually had a member of the Women's Resource Center come to the meeting and talk to us about this, and we're going to amend this, but essentially what we agreed to do is, so it says $5,000 per year as a budget cap, but I think what we're going to do next week is amend it so that it's $10,000 for the whole bylaw cycle for the 2 year period. So this would amount to about a 25% reduction in funding for the program, which is, I think, very, very reasonable. And I think it meets the needs of both parties, because they'll have the flexibility of the time to adjust, but also the program will essentially live within its means. So I think that we're really proud that we were able to reach this compromise. So I am excited to put that in. So that pretty much does it. That's pretty much what I have. I'm sorry that I talked so long, but I really want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to actually know what we're doing, because this is important and we're bargaining after all of this. So with that, we can get them.
Chris.
Unless you guys are saying that. first of all, sorry, I was not really in I think that the Addis news about the list is that, like, just because they have to win.
Not every organization that has to be funded needs to be in the guidelines. The guidelines are just guidelines. There's nothing to do with any allegations that happen. Just because an organization is in here is not being enacted and funded without the investments.
Ian.
Just like a couple questions regarding sub. So what's the sub? Is that what it is?
Sub adoption.
Okay. I was going back to where it's street law speaking. So what do they do now overall? And then who votes for it in general? Like what is the organization?
So the Willard Shea Hall Student Union Board, it's funded at 50 cents per student, and it focuses on Willard Shea Hall themed programming that takes place around or near Willard Shea Hall.
They do usually do the Mr. T talk series, and they now fund the paper bags that the popcorn comes in from the Village of Hall Resource Center. They don't fund the popcorn itself, they just fund the paper bags, which is why the bags are
stay. That's not
so the popcorn is funded not by sub. The popcorn bags are not 100% funded by sub.
Why are they not funded by sub?
Sub offered the Village of Hall Resource Center needed it, I'm not the village.
Okay, that just sounds like a sub taken by a money and growing the university fund that things are funded.
That's correct.
We should do something, but outside of that, who puts the rooms in the sub?
So a lot of people, I think, so a lot of people were here for this 2 years ago. In the fall of 2015, there was an issue where SUB essentially kicked a bunch of work out of their rooms. Like class councils, SA, ISC, handheld. And after that, the Dean of Students Office basically, I think, now does the room booking.
Okay, and then the nice regarding that, that's the guys getting
I think that if they want to take the memorial room away from us, they will have to, we will not leave without a fight.
Okay.
Yes, the process is now 100% not controlled by the students.
Okay.
Next to this, Olivia. What band is that? Olivia.
Okay, so let me point out that Tom met himself and we talked to him on Monday. We went to everything that he said. He's got a lot of time to do with it. He's going to go to the Matthews on the wall for a couple of hours. I said, Dave, you have an interview with him. I was going to have a meet prior before we do. That's Tom, that's Catholic. He spent so much time on it. Like not pulling the name over on the name guy. And you need to trust that to get part of this conversation.
Next is Debbie.
My question is about students tonight and the negative rules in the community. So in the case of this year where they have issues like giving information about the rubrics and like how much money they had, what happens if that happens again when you like decide not to cooperate with those things?
Essentially we're forcing them to keep the VP financial loop, and if they don't, then we'll just find them by initial with them to be in the
If you look at the resolution and you jump to line 20 through 31, that is essentially the enforcement guidelines. It's what actually gives power to all the rules we're setting. They're not just like the rules, we're saying you should try to do this. They're actually saying if you don't do this, the student assembly can find your violation of Appendix B and functionally take all the money away from the organization.
Joe?
So I'm going to ask a question about adequate affiliation, the non-discrimination part. I can
So from some perspectives, it makes sense, but from other ones, there is a concern that, you know, when you include this, so I'm going to speak from my experience, like, from a business perspective, when you look at that, there's conflict that in that organization around, like, you know, the Republicans who come in and, like, say, well, say, very anti-Semitic members of the organization, so it's not just a relation plus conflict. A lot, and there are some members who are really right now, and some of them have that conflict. So, you want to address that concern there because for organizations like Game like Wana, like, that's something that, you know, we deal with. So, there is concern there that I would think that it does become a negative. So, what was that concern?
So, one of the things that was really interesting about the online 124, it said that organizations may also force you to come to the conduct. So, if someone is maybe part of the organization that is saying that things are going to end your position in the organization, so that was something that we specifically talked about, that with someone's political affiliation, this is instead of affiliation because we're not saying party. So it's more, it's someone who can't say to someone, okay, you can't join this organization because you're a company, you can't join this organization, etc. We specifically didn't say ideology because it can be fall on the spectrum that is very far in the defensive category. You can consider yourself to be a Nazi, or you can consider yourself to be very far right to the point where you're incredibly offensive, then obviously. That would cause an issue. I think where this comes from specifically, like, I have consulted directly at least four or five times that people would not feel comfortable with having me in the organization because they didn't feel like I would match that with the group. But everyone who knows me, I have a relationship with the Republican. I mean, I'm getting not allowed in the organization because of my political beliefs. But I think that's a little ridiculous. So it's more of a problem. So you can still take someone out for not having to consider. So for example, someone who might be dead, it's like incredibly important to hurt members of the community. Then the people are taking the cases down. So, okay, if this person is supposed to be or being concerned with honor, but if the police escalate, that's okay. And the response is no, that I can't do it.
Yeah. So just to touch on the process quickly, the Appropriations Committee spent a very long time on Monday looking at all this staff capacity and members of the Assembly present. Everything in here is approving the use of the Student Assembly and Chance to discuss all these amendments. The Student Assembly still has complete power to amend this document next week when it comes back. The Appropriations Committee will also come back with amendments that we'll discuss for SAFC, for the Women's Resource Center, after discussing the regulations. Problematic nature of the amendments we proposed. So if you all have any problem with this, bring it up for debate next week. Read over it now, discuss it with other members of the assembly, and there's no reason to take the appropriations committee amendments to be absolutely necessary or correct. That's within the power and capability of elected officials. So read over the document, figure out what you want to discuss next week, but nothing should be debated or discussed right now because this is still new business. You can't do this business today now. Please just ask information or questions about the process and what's working about.
Just to build on that, because I think, like, in the past, about the that comes, you like, what apps comes to is, like, set, and you guys are like a recommendation. And I think, especially the pundit, like Bill was saying, these are recommendations. It's a very rough draft. I would say that next week, like, we can see the future of some of these things. I would say, like, please, if you feel a certain way about making these changes, amend it, have that discussion.
Let me know first.
Yeah. Did you want to ask?
Oh, yeah, so according to what you just said, is that this is new business and we're not discussing it today. And I had sent some emails over to Gabe, nice to see you. So, advisor for CCC, the Council Commission, as well as seeing tonight. And so, I did have a couple of edits to some of the guidelines. And so, I was told to come today, so I'm wondering, do I need to come next week? Okay. Okay, so I guess then, is this the time for us to discuss it? Sure. So I guess we'll just go up to CCC. One of the things that we shook out was going to be on the third line. things we wanted to strike was talking about the preparation and how we deal with the loss. And so one of the things that I talked to you about was like, how do we define the loss? For concert commission, we don't make money, as you guys should know. Is that that's not something that we're in the business of doing, so every concert is a loss. So all the information is already there for you to come to me as the advisor for CCC, and I can tell you the loss, I can give you each budget and tell you everything you spent on, even down to the witch hazel that over 40 you wanted before this concert. So I can tell you those things, but we don't make it as a report to give it to the assembly because that would be the kind of function of my job. Is that something that you are asking?
So we didn't touch Cornell Concert Commission except to remove the requirement that you have to do an event in the Bears Den. So this is just something that's like always been there. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, so you want to come. I mean, so just like taking like a look at it, I mean, my opinion is that it's like pretty reasonable that if you guys like use a lot of money that like you tell us so that we don't get like going inside. Whatever you guys think, like, so whatever. Like if you lose all your money and you don't tell us, then we'll probably be unhappy, right?
And then we'd also definitely be able to change the language of loss because that's one of the countries that don't have profits and losses. So I think you might want to phrase it in a certain way that even if the event doesn't go as planned, loss a lot more than expected. That all we're asking is that the report is being released. Once again, this might be the way that we can do it. So if you have suggested time to reach, don't discuss this entirely, and don't be taking the back on this. When there's a reporting mechanism for the documents, we don't see why it's a good idea to remove that reporting mechanism, but change the specifics and why you want to reporting mechanism.
Yeah, so that's something we can definitely talk about. My thing is, as those reports, it's not something that we normally do anyways. And so there have been concerts, there have been losses, all air concerts. There have been concerts where there have been more losses than other losses, and that's not something that you ever asked for. So the reason behind that is kind of like, why do we need that? Does that make sense? Okay. So, yeah, that's amended. We'll talk more about that in a
minute.
Yes. Is this for me?
So I think what we mean by a loss is less of, obviously, I agree with reports and like, you guys do have to because that's just the way you program. But just sort of like a specific example, like when you hosted Carly Rae Jepsen, that was a significant loss. You didn't expect for some reason people didn't attend, and you lost a significant amount of money. I think reporting, something like that happening is important, less than, well, the $10,000, because that's not going to make a big difference in the budget. But like, probably your attempt something was a huge loss.
So that was definitely before both of our times here. But that is something, like I said before, some are greater than others. That was, I think, talking with my director who was over it at that time, he even said that. Potentially, like that was a bigger loss than what some of our concerts have been, but in the world of concerts that don't make profit at a university or colleges, it's not the student money's loss. And I would say that was a time that I don't think they would put it out as well.
So I have a point of agree. What is the standard margin for the concert hosted by the concert commission? Whether that be a profit or not a loss, what's the
one of the things that we hope to do is looking at whatever the artist is. So we determine who the artist is and how much we're paying the artist, and then that's how we look at ticket sales. So our thing that we hope to get back is just revenue what we pay that artist. And it's usually two artists, sometimes it can be more. So that's usually what we look at.
Do you have any historical information or just not have your Spanish?
Yes, I'm over here for the artists, that's true. So when it comes to artists and their pay, that's something that we typically don't talk about contractually, we can't talk about how much we actually pay them. Well, not really.
Right, but then
so, in general, what do you mean? So what are you doing?
So in general, what are sort of the variances that you've seen historically as well as in your Nintendo? Have there been any concerts that have a great effect on the significant losses that are unexpected? Or do you get traditional run on like we expected a 200 people show up, or is it
No, they have been pretty traditional. I would say the ones we definitely always get more numbers in Martin Hall for homecoming, just because that's a big weekend, usually you have a bigger concert series as well. I would say that they didn't have Martin Hall last year for homecoming, so that definitely drew our partners a little bit. But if you ever look at too, that this is had to make advisors, this is really the big production of music is so hard to put on campus, but all across the board, the numbers have been pretty consistent with what you're trying to make or try to do.
And what do you see as the harm in sort of reporting when there is an unintended loss?
My thing is with the language and with what is a loss, and then why I'm reporting this. This language or this line is not in CPP, and it's also not in Slowday. So the thing is, why would you put them in there? We do similar things, especially Slowday, it has a bigger budget, and also it's only one day that we do throughout the entire year, and have a smaller budget. So our losses are always going to be a significantly different margin than they are going to be with those. So I would say that if you're going to put it in CCCs, you should also put it in CUPD post-Slowday. Or if you're not going to add it to those, you should take it out.
Would the others be amenable to those terms?
Yeah.
That's what we would need.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think like what the goal of it is also is just like, as we can tell by the conversation, information is difficult. There's a lot of overlap between organizations and like rollover members. So I think the goal is just like, because these companies have different so variable numbers, that information is just transparent and readily available. I feel like we'd be open to the other groups as well. So I think we'd like to limit towards anybody. It's just information. We just want to make sure that us as the representatives of student money have information on where it's going.
Evan? Chris, can you pass the microphone?
And then we also had to talk about CU tonight as well, looking at some of the changes and edits that we wanted to make to that. So CU tonight, as you would say, has some issues, I think is gateways to put it. One of the things that was put into the proposed guidelines was talking about having a rubric in which the SA Vice President of Finance would approve. Committee. I, as their advisor, I don't see the point of doing that, and I am fully aware of having a rubric and how to include that. Also, the SAVP is an extracurricular member, so therefore, the best person to come to the meeting would have the same rubric, and also would also be the person to vote on the organization that's that person. So, for me, I would say that is not a but
if
you have something else to say.
Now I have a motion to extend the meeting to 6:30. That's okay. Gotcha.
So I guess, you know, I think that, you know, members of the assembly can speak about how they felt about the CUTI process. I can speak for myself, but I try not to like interfere with organizations too much. I'm probably more on the heavy-handed side than most, but like, too far. So I usually try to like give organizations a little bit of flexibility. I can say that like this requirement, like I could be the only person who's sitting in the room, but like usually I prefer to refer to the appropriations committee unless there's a pretty compelling reason for me to have the information. So I would feel a lot more comfortable with giving the appropriations committee and or the student assembly the ability to oversee the process rather than judge or my successor.
As nice as it would be for Vice President of Finance, as well, we take the next year to attend all the organizations that voting members need to report and not get reported. There are 20 organizations funded directly by the executive committee. Unfortunately, that's never going to happen because we've had a lot of voting members here. We should just be more of these roles. But I truly believe in having the rubric once a year, so it looks like it's like we can make it more specific. Approved by the appropriations committee. I don't think it's a tremendous hurdle to try and have a child in this organization that
we have seen kind of some problems in the past. And the appropriations committee contains eight voting members of student assembly plus the national finance. All those members have been elected in some form of by the graduate population. I believe that they're the best trusted members to approve such a year. And then I don't think that it would be a regular process, and that's going to make it sound better, but it would be like a once a semester report. They would present the build out report after the process has been done for sitting tonight, and the appropriations committee can go ahead. And they can't act in any way until the following year, when we do model and things like that. They'll be able to see whether or not sitting tonight and talk about the main improvements, because you can operate the need to improvements in the way that sitting tonight functions.
Yes, and I can agree to that as well, but I would have to say that for me coming into this role, coming into this position, Steve tonight had not been functioning, and that was left up to the student assembly to try to make sure that was functioning and it was not. So for me as the advisor, I would say, why am I not qualified when I do have multiple degrees as well as certification in diversity and inclusion to be a person who can make these rubrics, who can advise these students to make the right decisions because they are on their same level of their student leaders. So for me, having an extra step to have the SA president for finance, or VP for finance, and the preparation to approve this group that they could have been a part of if they were there this past semester, would have alleviated maybe kind of closer than that. And then also having it to where each funding cycle, because Steve tonight does not have just one funding cycle, they have multiple funding cycles within a semester, sitting that as well to the VP of finance and having them approve it, what is the point of that if you have a professional advisor? And then also in the language of making sure that each applicant goes to these events, that's something that we strive to do, but it's not something that can be mandated if you have events that are on the same night, multiple events on the same night, as well as students have classes. And for me, education in the classroom is really important when you're events. So I think there's some changes to that language.
Yeah, I'm gonna put that.
So I'm not questioning you back on your subject, but I don't know when it started, but especially this semester, we had a lot of issues with the grading report and how it's been handled and how it's not been used. Like organizations don't get any information about why they did it was funded if you had an appeal. And I'm assuming that was really this semester, I'm assuming. I think it's less of a, you don't think you're being more doing it, it's more of a checks and balances system that we have on every school organization, just to make sure that the organization is running itself.
Yes, but this is an extra check and balance. A check and balance with this organization is going to be the advisor. So with this one, the rubric that was in place is not really a rubric. It was a constellation of if you show up, you get these many points. If you have your complete form filled out, you get these many points. When in its essence, you should already have it completed before you turn it in. So that's something that we're trying to build. That's something that my office is actually looking at and trying to make sure that students are learning and the students are developing better ways so they can help their students, their colleagues as well, put on their events. I know I'm running out of time. Okay. I saw that you were doing in 5 minutes. Okay, yeah. So,
no, okay, can I have one? Yeah, five?
Wait, so you said, okay, so you said the advisor checks and balances of your organization.
I said, how is one of the checks and balances?
So, why is there an issue with the student assembly also being a checks and balance, especially since somehow they had an advisor and they were doing their stuff and the appeals didn't happen?
So my thing is, why hasn't the SA been doing it better in the time before I came? That's my question. So we had these things where we did check it, when we did it, was looking at it, the VP was there, supposed to be there when we were handling it, but it was not being handled. And I would say for every rewriting the Constitution is something that is happening, that is looking at, that seems tonight may or may not be the same that it is come the fall. So that's something that's already being looked at. It's just how it was functioning anyway.
So, just because the SA has tons of words.
Oh, yes.
The guys have an entire chat. And so, if anything, we're both kind of the same direction, but we need to do more checks on CGA, clearly after the semester. So, the SA now wants to step up and be like,
but I would say you should have already done that, so now the advisor is taking that extra.
advisor who is currently who's new is now going to help him move into a different direction.
Okay.
Yeah, so like we've heard this story before where like we recommend like taking an action and proposing a recommendation on the board or like reducing funding for an organization, and then you know the common fringe like, well, why haven't we done this in the past? Well, the reason we haven't done this in the past about it is like we didn't know about it, or because like we've never had an organization that just like ignores our tools and just defunds organization based on base. So like yeah, that did happen. It did happen. And like I don't
know. So these problems with so if we create all the
perhaps, but I think it's also possible that many organizations and minority groups that are multiple are encompassed to an assembly in the way that they feel like it's good, isn't controlling that duty. I think that the intention of these changes is that even like mistakes were made in the past, we want to make sure they're not made in the future, and that obviously the FAA has a role to play in it because there was some sort of failure that happened last semester. And if the complaint is that, well, like, if you find it in there, it didn't happen, then that's what we want to fix. We want to make sure that the FAA is there to ensure that it doesn't happen in the future.
Yeah, I do want to point out that it's the organizations that apply as well as other constituents that request that the FAA have better checks on you tonight, assuming they're doing it. And with that, we are out of time. So we'll table this, and the meeting is concluded.